Before the president had even gone to the White House Rose Garden and announced what the details of his deficit reduction plan were, Congressman Paul Ryan was spelling out what his concerns were.
This looks like, to me, not a very good sign, because it looks like the president wants to move down the class warfare path. Class warfare will simply divide this country more, will attack job creators, divide people, and it doesn't grow the economy.
What did the president say in response?
Now, we're already hearing the usual defenders of these kinds of loopholes saying this is just class warfare. I reject the idea that asking a hedge fund manager to pay the same tax rate as a plumber or a teacher is class warfare. I think it's just the right thing to do. This is not class warfare. It's math.
And we've gotten responses from our listeners as well.
This is Angela from Detroit. It is just wrong to keep asking the middle class and the lower class or the poor to keep sacrificing when we're dwindled down to almost nothing.
This is David Keene from Statesboro, Georgia. The Republican Party is only concerned about class warfare because we've been undergoing class warfare for the past 30 years, and they're afraid that the underclass is going to start fighting back.
You can give us your response at 8778-MY-TAKE. But we had to wonder if this term class warfare is just being bandied about too much and being used too easily to perhaps describe something that isn't actually class warfare. And if you want to get to the bottom of these historical terms, who do you ask? Ken Davis, of course, author of Don't Know Much About History. Good morning again, sir.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, well, so, okay, we know that the term class warfare and class struggle goes back at least as far as Karl Marx.
It goes back a long way in American history, even though we didn't call it that. But certainly James Madison was talking about it while they were having the Constitutional Convention in 1787. He says at the convention that civilized societies are always divided into classes, and he was warning against the idea that there would be an agrarian revolt. And he actually asked Thomas Jefferson in a letter, "Are you part of this leveling spirit?" There was already this tension, and that's the tension that's always existed, you know, go back forever in human history. Certainly was part of American history from the colonial period on, and James Madison was worried about it in 1787.
But it was absolutely brought to a head during the time of the robber barons and then the time of the Great Depression, of course. It became relatively open, although they didn't still use the term class warfare, right?
That term does come later, but we can see more examples of it throughout American history. I mean, if you go back to the fact that there was a constitutional convention really comes out of a rebellion of farmers in Massachusetts, Shays's Rebellion. What were they upset about? They were upset about the haves in Boston who were making all the rules. So they had debts and foreclosures and unfair taxes. That's always been part of the tension in American history. After the Civil War, during the Civil War, you have people saying this is a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, especially when the draft came along and you could buy your way out of the draft. So it's always been part of the American story, but not one we like to tell in our history books. Lincoln talks about labor being superior to capital in 1861. That's heresy. That's pretty radical in the modern GOP, that labor should get the highest consideration. Then you have somebody like Mother Jones, the populist movement after the Civil War. She says, you farmers need to raise less corn and more hell. So it has been a tension that gets exaggerated in times of extremes. The Gilded Age was one of those. The Great Depression, that's where the term really is used in a political sense by Hoover against FDR.
But in general, we don't come to blows in our class warfare rivalry in America, although there's been violent conflicts, the Haymarket riots and union battles, that sort of thing. But in general, it's not like the pictures we're seeing over in Europe.
No, it was it did come to blows a number of times, but usually suppressed, usually because the haves were pretty powerful and they were pretty good at keeping the have-nots from coming to that. But I mentioned Shays Rebellion. Didn't go very far, but it was there. The labor wars, as you mentioned, Haymarket Square, the Pullman strike, the Homestead strike, very violent period in American history, certainly a labor versus the boss's kind of struggle, but a class struggle in part.
But however, we're speaking with Ken Davis, who's the author of Don't Know Much About History. To John's point, very often class warfare has been used more as a political rhetorical tool than an actual description of a conflict.
That's true. We haven't had the Bolshevik Revolution here, and that certainly was part of the fear in the early 20th century. People said, look what's going on over there. We don't want that here. So
was that a real fear, or was that a fear manipulated by the haves to basically create what became the Cold War?
It goes back much further than the Cold War, because we see this, the first Red Scare is in the 1920s. But no, I think people were absolutely afraid, and it preyed on some basic American fears of things that are foreign, things that are too strange, and a lot of that was tied up with anti-immigrant feeling, both in the 1920s, and you can go back even further in American history. So I think it preyed on some basic fears. But as long as the American system basically raised all the boats, and we have that expression, John F. Kennedy made it famous, a rising tide lifts all boats. As long as all the boats were coming up, things were generally pretty calm. It's, again, this periods of great excess. On the flip side, we're talking about something that usually is used by Republicans against Democrats.
Yeah.
Hoover against FDR, George W. Bush against Al
Gingrich
Gore.
Gingrich against Clinton.
It's been used many times. You go back to 1980 and it has a flip side. That's where people are saying Ronald Reagan and Reaganomics are a war on the poor, a different kind of class struggle. They're balancing the budget on the backs of the poor. So this tension always exists in American history, and it flowers and gets bigger when we're in times of extreme.
Especially presidential election year.
That will always bring it on, too.
Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. Thanks so much, Ken.
My pleasure.
It's interesting that people can have such passionate feelings about something that they really have no actual memory of, certainly in our era. You can get more coverage of the president's deficit plan by heading to our website, but no segment got listeners going as much, at least recently, as the president of Americans for Tax Reform, speaking yesterday on the program, Grover Norquist.
All the people who invest and create small businesses and jobs are exactly the sort of targets that are going to be hit by any tax.
You can listen back to our interview with Norquist by heading to thetakeaway.org. And listeners called 877-8-MY-TAKE.
This is John calling from Rhode Island, and I'm a small business owner, and I'm tired of everyone talking about tax hikes on it's going to hurt the job creators. I am a job creator. My personal tax rate will have nothing to do with whether I'll hire someone or not. It has to do with what the demand is and if I have enough employees right now to meet that demand, period.
Don't let our other listeners fire the first shot. If you want to get involved in this combat over Grover Norquist, just go to thetakeaway.org or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.